Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan.
And it's me, Rachel Lindsay.
How are you doing, Rachel?
Better. Better. You know, I've been in kind of a mood this past week, but I interviewed Devon Franklin the other day.
And
in one conversation, and he's got a new book coming out. Everybody get it. It's all about expectations. One conversation, I said, man, you don't know how much I needed to hear the things that you were talking about. And it just kind of got my mood right. It just kind of set me straight. I'm appreciative of that. So I'm good. Thank you for asking. I'm still disappointed over some things, but I'm going to be okay, which is what Devon told me. Yeah. Yeah. We got to have him on here.
Yeah, I love Devon. We did something at the BET Awards weekend a couple of years ago now. It was me, him, Jacob Lattimore.
Look at my
Orlando
face.
Basil. Yeah, we had a talk. What? Why you're
because you always did something with someone. You're always connected to someone. I just said we should have him on the podcast. That's all.
Well, I was just saying that I knew him. Wow.
Oh, speaking of Jacob Lattimore, I saw the first episode of The Chi. I never really watched it.
You never watched that show?
I saw the first episode of this new season because I had to interview Lala today. It's good.
You like it?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the one episode that I saw. I might go back and watch the rest.
You like shows like that?
What are shows like that?
I'm just saying, I'm sorry that I'm eating on the podcast, guys. I'm starving. But you like shows like The Chi.
I just found it interesting. I knew nothing about it. I know nothing about the show. I was watching it in preparation for the interview.
You start off with the first season, or did you jump into this?
No. Season four. Like, just one episode, season four.
The Chi. I think they should say it like that. Because they say The Chi. But it's like, they should say The Chi.
I'm pretty satisfied with how it is.
It's good.
No, they shouldn't.
The Chi. You know what I'm saying? Like, get crazy with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whatever.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Yo, so how have you been doing since you tried to cancel me over my Melinda Gates take?
I didn't try to cancel you. You didn't get canceled. You just got
checked.
Told how it should be. Exactly.
Can I say something, though?
I loved it. I was so proud of you for posting it and leaving it up. But you love that kind of stuff. Come on.
It's not true. But I'm consistent on this, though.
Did you see Orlando Jones' monologue?
Orlando Jones on my page? Oh, yeah. No, I didn't see it.
It popped up. Orlando. So you know how like certain people pop up when you click on it? And I was like, whoa, this man wrote a whole paragraph. Basically, though, talking about your point. To your point, he wrote a paragraph. He was like, she got nannies, this, that, and the third. Like, of this woman deserves whatever she gets, basically, is what he said.
So here's my thing. I'm consistent on this. I just want to point this out. I used to be at TMZ railing against guys like Kevin Federline, who was getting paid spousal support and was spending that time playing golf and going to Ralph's all day. All right. And Chris Judd, J-Lo's ex, who I think got something crazy like $20 million.
Did he really?
I'm going to look this up right now. It's a joke to me. Like, I'm going to look it up right now. But I think it's something crazy that he got. Well, Chris Judd's still kind of still holding it together.
I feel like that's hush money. Like, part of that money is don't ever say anything. Don't do any interviews. Don't speak about me.
I think the Chris Judd situation was definitely hush money. Because I think there might have been a, some Ben Affleck shenanigans going on maybe before. You know what I mean?
Oh, really? I'm unfamiliar with the timeline.
Well, I don't know that for sure, but I do know that Ben Affleck made contact while she was still married, you know? So,
sounds right.
No, so he got $11 million. They were married less than a year.
Woo!
I think that's crazy. I think
she
that's
gave
crazy.
It to him. They didn't go to court over that.
I know. I think that's nuts.
But that's not something that they battled it out about. It seems like, I'm sure J-Lo had a prenup. It seems like that was all a part of the deal. That's not something to be mad about.
That he got $11 million for being married to Jennifer Lopez for less than a year?
That's J-Lo's decision. Clearly, that was the prenup.
Well, there you go. You know, at the end of the day, everybody get your coins.
Yeah, don't knock his hustle.
I'm not knocking his hustle.
But as we learned after the podcast, Bill and Belinda didn't have a prenup.
Yeah, so get that money, you know. I couldn't care less how much money she gets. I just like playing that game because women and men always see that differently. They sure. always see it differently. Like in
have
my
a
particular,
baby. Have a baby. Have a baby. And then we'll see. That's what I would like. Just have a baby. Go through it. Carry that baby. Do what mothers do. I'm not a mother.
I'm about to say, but that case, then I don't understand how to respond to that. Like,
then don't. That's why people were all up in your messages.
What if I came back to you? You said have a baby, right?
Yeah.
All right. Build Microsoft. How many people have had babies versus how many people
Microsoft? We don't know what Melinda, knowing that Melinda has a computer science background, knowing that she worked for the company, she obviously didn't start it with him, right? He started it. It was his idea. It was already.
He was worth $2 billion when he met her.
$2 billion. Now he's 140 something billion?
Okay.
We have no idea what her involvement is thereafter they got married. We don't know.
What I'll tell you is this. Do you think that how Microsoft has taken off since 1994, all right, is due to Melinda Gates? Or do you think it might be due to the boom in the internet?
It might be both. I honestly don't know. But I'm not going to knock her and act like she didn't contribute at all. I'm not going to act. And that's what you did. And that's why people were mad at you. Why people were in your DMs. You gave her nothing.
So my thing is this. I'm not saying, and I'm really saying this too, because I look at this and this, I'm really saying this is just, I'm trying to stay intellectually consistent on this, okay? Right now, if somebody meets, like Kevin Federline meets Britney Spears, right? Mm-hmm. Kevin Federline meets Britney Spears, they get married. Okay? To me, I look at that as they have a bunch of kids, they move on, whatever. They weren't together nearly as long as Bill and Melinda Gates were, number one.
Right.
So a lot of these things are shorter marriages. But I don't think that I'm just being for real. She had knowledge. She stopped working at Microsoft a couple years after they got married. I don't think there's really any world where we could attribute the success of Microsoft to Melinda Gates.
So this
because,
is what I...
Because remember now, Microsoft has a bunch of other billionaires that are there too. Microsoft has Paul Allen, Microsoft has Steve Ballmer. Mm-hmm. She wasn't the CEO of Microsoft. She wasn't any of that. Now, I'm sure she had a huge impact on Bill Gates' life. And obviously, $100 million, I was joking around. She's going to get billions and billions of dollars. And she should get billions of dollars. But to say that Microsoft wouldn't have been Microsoft when Microsoft was already Microsoft.
I didn't say that. That's not what I said. And I think that what I'm looking at too is, for example, there's certain things when I talk about my marriage and I say, you know, if I didn't, I would be a hustler and doing what I do regardless. But there's certain things that I get from my marriage and the support that I have that help my mentality to get me through certain things so I can go out and be great. And I think those are things that you can't measure that you get from the support of a significant other. So you have no idea what Melinda Gates was giving Bill at home, like to help him out, to be the... I'm hearing it as I'm saying it. I'm hearing it as I'm saying it. You know what I mean. It's just hard. It's just things that you can't measure, but you know what I mean. Like we have no idea the ins and outs of their marriage and what she did him and how she could have helped him to be as great as he's become. So that's all I'm saying.
We should say that he's great and in her own right, yes. She's great too. They've given away billions and billions of dollars on behalf of a charity, through a charity that she is the primary focus of. I'd say, to be honest with you, that Bill Gates is actually at this point more known as a philanthropist than he is as a...
That's true.
And she has a large part to do with that. I'm just saying, man, it was hard watching Kevin Federline.
How much did he get? I have no idea.
Play golf. She was paying him for a while. I can't remember what it was.
Okay. Oh, that's right. But, he's married now.
Yeah, he was married. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. I've never been married. I can tell you one thing. For me, I probably wouldn't even have a valid driver's license if it wasn't for Kalika. Like, I was in charge of this trip, and we missed the first flight. So I would say that wow. she would, if we got married and divorced, she would probably 60%.
That's why they say women are the neck.
Women are the neck? Huh. What does that mean? Women are the neck.
Men are the head. Women are the neck, right? They do all the control.
That's bullshit, though.
Okay, fine. It's bullshit.
Women are
let's
the head.
Let's clip this and make this as no, he continues. Saying, let's no. clip this
but
and
see,
make this.
But
a,
see to
a,
but see to
a video.
But see to me that to me that's backwards thinking. In some relationships, women are the head. And a lot of times, women are the head. Society would both. Probably be better if women
men,
were the head.
Women are always the neck.
So
they
women
might be
are
the head
all...
and the neck. They might be the head and the neck.
All right, fine. Melinda Gates.
Let it go. Stop trying to fight it.
I love you. All right, let's take a break. All right, we love having people on Higher Learning that push the envelope and really change perspectives. And this guy right here is somebody that has done this. And I've held this secret until we started this podcast. This guy is helping me with my finances. I'm with the UBS team. If we can ever get it all straightened out. He is a former NFL star who is now pivoted to something that most players don't do post-retirement, which is being in the financial game. It's really a fantastic and really fascinating transformation. Joining us today on Higher Learning, Adewale Ogunleye. How are you doing, my brother?
Man, I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you.
Yeah, now,
I would just like to say that maybe I should join the USB family, seeing how Van is podcasting from Hawaii. And I'm
USB.
Here in my office. So maybe this is working for one of us, and for one it's not.
Yeah. Well, come on. We would love you at UBS. We would love to have you over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's not USB. We're not talking about getting extra storage.
Did I say UBS? Did I say
USB? We're not talking about getting extra storage. We're talking about getting extra kizzy kizzy cash.
I'm not the first person to make that mistake. My apologies.
So seriously, I'll tell you something about UBS real quick.
UPS. They thought I was delivering packages.
And by the way, which is funny. I'll tell you why that's funny. That's funny because, and I don't mean to say this in a funny way, but it's true. I'll tell you why that's funny at you being at UPS because people don't know this, but there are mad ex-NFL guys that work jobs like that. I remember being at Best Buy when I worked at Best Buy. And this is in no way to shit on these jobs. It's just something that you learn about the nature of the NFL when you get a little older. I remember being at Best Buy and our loss prevention senior, I went into his office and there was a picture of him in a Ravens uniform standing on the field in the Super Bowl on kickoff. And I was like, what the hell? And he was like, yeah, I got a Super Bowl ring. I played 4 years with the Ravens. And I'm like, wow. And so that brings us to the point of a place like UBS, which is to help people, athletes and regular people, make better decisions, make realer decisions and more future-centric decisions with their money. The question is, how do you go from being one of the best defensive players in the NFL to being a money guy? What was that transition like? How did that happen for you?
You know, ultimately, man, I just always followed my passion of giving back. So I knew that no matter what I was doing in life, it was going to be about pouring into people. So the financial industry just happened to actually just come about. But still, I'm following my passions of pouring into people. So it could be any industry I would have gotten into. It would have been in an industry or a place or situation where I was going to be able to help people. So again, I don't need the job. I did a decent, you know, had a decent career and made a decent amount of money and saved a decent amount of money. So with this job, Van, being at the head of, you know, sports and entertainment at UBS, I'm able now to do those things that I love to do, helping people, getting them to a place where we understand exactly what money really is, understand how money really works, understanding how we should be in a mindset of building legacies the same way some of our other communities. And when I say other communities, because we know a lot of the communities we come from, we know sports are filled with, you know, young Black and brown men. And these communities sometimes lack the resources and the ecosystem of advice to help keep that money within that community, within their families, that they can have for generations to come, which a lot of our communities have more access to it. So being at UBS, biggest private wealth bank in the world, I want to make sure that those resources, those answers, that ecosystem of sound advice is readily available for our young men and women in the entertainment business. So again, I just followed my passion of giving back, and it just happens to be in the financial institution.
Is it also because the lack of what you didn't see when you were an athlete? You maybe saw, I mean, we've all seen the 30 for 30 broke, and we all maybe know somebody maybe who didn't even, it's not even that they mishandled their money. They just didn't know any better. You know, like you said, we aren't equipped with these things in our communities. Is it something that you specifically saw or experienced that made you say, you know what, I particularly want to work with athletes or those in the sports and entertainment world?
Yeah, definitely. I think just, I have friends that are in the entertainment business, and I just see the sharks and the hands and the transactional relationships that most of us have with the people that are in our lives. I'm sorry to say it, like whether it's business manager, manager, advisor, CPA, agent, it's all transactional. It's about like, how much money can I get off the talents that we have? And I realized that we're playing against a system that has been set up for people who are knowledgeable, for people who understand exactly what they're getting into. And it's really not about having the money. It's having the knowledge behind what money really is. And that's where the power lies. And from my own personal experience, I got lucky. You know, my advisors, when I, you know, the few advisors that I had before I got, you know, sound advice, you should just throw my money against the wall and let's see what sticks. I didn't get burnt by that approach. But at the end of the day, majority of people who have that approach get burnt. And those are the headlines you see on 30 for 30. Those are the headlines you see on your favorite, you know, podcast or TV show about athletes going broke. And I just want to try, especially with the amount of money people are making now, put them in the right places to make sure that they can be like the Dwayne Wade's at 39 buying part ownership of the Utah Jazz. Like, money is real right now. And we just got to make sure that we have the knowledge behind that money.
So it's me, Van, you know, I came from Baton Rouge, you know, and I became a first round draft pick out of LSU, but I also took classes at Southern to keep it real. You know what I mean? So I went to LSU and Southern, but I played for the Tigers. I'm a first round draft pick. I was drafted number 5.
What position?
For me, tight end.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I'm a generational tight end, is what I am. I'm Eric Gilbert, if he could just stay on the field. That's who I am. I'm a generational tight end. I was drafted number five. Monkey the Big Deal. What is the most important thing that I need to know about money? Wale, I'm about to be rich. I've been working for this. I've been setting up cones in the backyard for years and years. Me and my dad have been lifting weights. He was too hard on me. Our relationship is strained. What happens now? What do I need to know about money? What's the most important thing?
The most important thing you need to know about money, and unless you've been taught money, it's pretty simple. You know nothing about money, right? That's number one. So the first thing I would tell you to do as high as a just generational tight end that you are out of LSU, hire an expert. Hire somebody that actually knows exactly what money is. But here's now where you protect yourself. Make sure they're with a reputable firm, right? Make sure that when you start screaming and hollering, they don't want the smoke, right? They want to make sure, like, I don't want to have Ben on social media, you know, screaming about, you know, you guys are ripping me off. Be with a reputable firm that does background checks on you, FBI checks, FINRA checks, SEC checks, making sure that there are no complaints against you. Those are some of the things that I didn't even know coming out of Indiana that I should have been doing. Knowing that, you know, I see this guy, he seems like he's cool. He may have a player that I know or a player that I respect as his client. And I'm looking at it, well, if he's with him, maybe I should be with him. How about I do a background check? They do background checks on us as players. Everybody, anytime I want to get a mortgage or I want to get a new credit card or I'm about to get a new job, they check my background from first grade until I graduated from Indiana. So do the same thing for these executives. Even though they have a suit and tie, don't be fooled by that. Don't be fooled by that.
How, real quick, how important me as a black, young black athlete or any as, take the hypothetical away, as a young black athlete, how important would you say that person that you hire to help watch your money and advise you on money is black? How important do you think that is to have somebody that maybe understands what that situation is like, advise you on how to spend and make more money? Do you think that we should be hiring black people in those roles more often?
I feel absolutely you should be hiring black. But let me tell you this. I had that. I got out of college. I put the fist up. I wanted to go all black, right? I'm Nigerian. I'm going back to the roots. I want to make sure that we take care of our communities. At the end of the day, the person that I hired knew nothing about how I should be treated, right? So that's great to have that mindset. And at the end of the day, it's good to want to uplift your community. Really, that's basically what you're saying, man. Like, uplift the people around you, your communities. There's talented lawyers, doctors, agents, CPAs, accountants, all of that stuff in our own communities. And we have to find them. But the truth of the matter is, more importantly, find somebody that actually knows what they're talking about. The financial industry is dominated by middle-aged white men. That's just the way it is, okay? So in that aspect, find somebody, one, that understands what money is, and number two, that at least will hold your hand, right? Don't look at my group of friends as a posse. Don't look at them as a gang. Like, oh, I can't deal with these gangs of that are around these athletes. Understand, maybe this is my family members, my friends, and I may have some form of survivor's guilt where I'm like, I'm the only kid that made it out of the projects, and I have this guilt of I want to bring everybody with me.
Right.
The financial industry looks at that as an entourage, right? We look at that as charity. But the financial industry will look at a kid or an athlete that invests in the Boys and Girls Club as doing it the right way. But the guy that takes his homies to Cancun or to Colombia for the weekend as he's spending lavishly. It's actually the same thing. It's about giving back. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is find, as a financial institution, is how do we channel that inner, you know, sometimes survivor's remorse, that way of giving back, and do it in a way where it's not destructive, do it where our money is working for us, and that's the difference. So to answer your question, I know I ramble a bit, man, but to answer your question, I would love to uplift our community, but the truth of the matter is when it comes to your finances, get somebody knowledgeable first, straight up. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only thing you can't really get back is one, lost time, and you lost money of talent. We know some people have 15 minutes of fame, some people have 30. But at the end of the day, the gravy train stops for most of us. So it's a pretty short period of time, and you want to make sure whoever handles your money knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. While I ask this question, Van, I want you to think about what your vertical would have been in that hypothetical that you just mentioned, your vertical jump.
It's different. I was messed up, by the way. Wow. Wow.
A lot of people who listen to our podcast are not athletes, but they're curious and they want to make their money work for them, but they don't even know where to start. They don't even know how to do it, or maybe they don't really have the finances to invest. I know, you know, a lot of times we're taught make the money, save the money, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Nothing. So what advice, one, would you give for someone who's interested in starting, trying to figure out where to grow their money or how to grow it? And I really want to know your thoughts on cryptocurrency.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm seeing athletes donate their full salaries to cryptocurrency.
They're not donating their salaries to cryptocurrency.
So you know what I mean. I'm sorry.
That would be so funny. It would be so funny. Like LeBron James, I like to give my whole salary this year.
You know what I mean?
to Bitcoin.
You know what I mean.
Get it. I think what people need to understand that entertainment athletes are a microcosm of society. So whatever's going on in my own personal family life, my own personal life, my friend's life, people around me, it's probably happening to most people in America, just maybe at a different scale. So the same advice that I would give an athlete, I would give a regular person is find someone you can trust. Maybe talk to someone at your local bank and tell them, hey, I'm interested in starting to save. And in that process, see if they're willing to teach you really about the basis of what finances are. There's a lot of places, resources. Let's not, you know, Google has, you know, taken over a lot of people's lives, but you can easily just Google a lot of terms and start understanding what money is. But at the same time, I'd give the same advice to an athlete, I'd give to a regular person. Surround yourself with someone knowledgeable and that's someone that's going to help you and teach you as you're going about your finances. And as with crypto, I'd be lying to you if I told you I had a crystal ball. I don't know where it's going to go. I know it's a trend right now. For me personally, I get scared when things become trendy, right? I get scared when my barber is talking about something or the guy that's serving me lemonade at the restaurant is like, yo, I just got this crypto. When everyone's talking about something, I get a little worried. So what I'll say is find somebody who understands it, get a good advisor to teach you on it. If there's something that you want to do, you know, and you're passionate about it and you have money to invest in anything you want. But again, make sure you have sound advice. But every day I'm seeing it to my friends are hitting me every day like, yo, what's up with this crypto? What's up with this? And I'm like, oh man, I don't know what to tell you.
I want no parts.
I don't
understand it. So
yeah. And which leads me to my next question. So I genuinely don't like this. Like I think Wale, you and Antoine and everybody over there are starting to know this about me. Like, I genuinely don't enjoy this. I don't enjoy
what? What's this?
Like talking about money. I don't like talking about money. I don't like really thinking about money. I like creating dope shit and then putting it out into the world. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to be cheated on my talent. Right. So I always want what I think I can get, but right. I don't like. People love it. People love watching shit go up and down. I don't dig it at all. Money to me growing up was always something that was stressing my people out. So mm-hmm. I'm connected to that. How does somebody like me who really doesn't want to have to deal with this avoid getting ripped off? Like, because what you'll do is you'll find somebody and you'll be like, hey, mm-hmm. these are the guys that's going to handle this, but you still want to be engaged enough to where you're not, somebody isn't going out there and making decisions on your behalf that you don't like. How do I trust somebody to make these decisions, but also have enough agency over them to mm-hmm. where I'm not getting killed or ripped off or ending up like Wesley Snipes? Shout out to our brother.
Great question. Man, you know, you fall in the majority of people in the entertainment space that are very creative. Creative people tend to really just want to just create stuff, do things, provide for people, create content, whatever it is, master their craft. And when it comes to finances, sometimes it seems like it's a burden to kind of want to get into it and get into, you know, crossing your T's and dotting your I's. So what I would tell you from my just a personal experience, I think you've got to do the exercise, man. Like, you've got to say, you know what? For these next 2 or 3 months, I'm going to shut everything down. I'm going to focus on my financial stability, my financial future. I'm going to see about setting up, getting an audit maybe once every 6 months, and setting up a process where you're forcing yourself to have these meetings that discuss your finances and your future. So you now have to do something that you're not comfortable doing, because at the end of the day, the industry finds people like that. And football, what's so crazy is the ball always finds the weakest link on the field every single time. Same thing probably in basketball. The best basketball player is going to find the weakest defender on that court. And with the financial industry and financial advisors, they love people who don't want to talk finances. They love that, because at the end of the day, it's transactional. I can get as much fees out of you because you're not really paying attention and you're not checking me and there's no checks and balances. So what I would tell you to do is, you know, let's put the big boy pants on, put the big girl pants on, and let's do the work, man. Let's get out there and force ourselves to be involved in our own finances. I mean, it's your life, you know, so that's what I tell you.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the partnerships that you just announced? You got a partnership with the SIAC, the largest HBCU collegiate conference in America. Can you talk about that and the importance of being involved with HBCUs?
Oh, man, that's a great initiative. And thank you for bringing that up. With the SIAC, again, you know, the truth of the matter is, as my position in you know, sports entertainment, people think really at the end of the day is about trying to bring, you know, athletes into the firm and, you know, have as much revenue and building. So we know with the SIAC, there's two things we're going to get out of it. One, we're going to help a community that we think is underserved. But two, the financial industry needs to start understanding there's a plethora of talent in these schools. So when we go to the SIAC, I want those student athletes to realize that, listen, the chance of you making professional are zero to none. There might be one of you that might slip, and that's even at a major university, though, man. Not just HBCU.
Why are you doing? Why are you doing?
He needs to give them the truth. Yes. I'm with him.
Why are you doing like that?
He's gonna sell them false hope.
It's true, and it's not just HBCU.
Wait. I'm sorry, man. If you guys had a partnership with the SEC or the Big Ten, would you tell them the same thing? Like, while I said the chances are zero to none.
I mean, when no HBCU athletes were drafted in this.
Listen to this, though, man. Listen to this. I think Alabama had, there's 100 people at Alabama, 100, okay?
Right.
100 students, I mean, and football players. I think the draft had maybe 250 in the NFL draft, okay? I think eight players from Alabama got drafted. Now, that's a great school. Still, those numbers still say, even if you go to Alabama, the chances of you making a professional, are still slim to none.
But what you just did, though, was kind of deceptive a little bit. I just say that because that's of draft-eligible Alabama players. I'm not sure how many seniors Alabama had. I'm not sure how many third-year players Alabama had. The question would be about, like, I'm just going to say that because people are going to say that. The question would be about how many people did Alabama have eligible for the draft that were drafted. But I get what you're saying. It was just funny.
No HBCU players were drafted, and I think that goes to his point.
There's more people. By far, more people at Alabama not getting drafted than getting drafted. And I had the same conversation out of Alabama. I had this conversation out of LSU, out of Indiana. The same thing I'm telling you is not just because it's HBCUs. It's because there's not that many spots.
Right. Yeah.
So if you're good enough to play football in the NFL, you'll play. like Jerry Rice. There's a bunch of, you know, Walter Payton. There's a bunch of
Jerry Rice, legends. Walter Payton, Michael Strahan, Aeneas Williams, Scotty Anderson.
High school kid who thinks no matter what school he goes to, you're gonna make it professional. But let me go back to why the SAAC before Van tried to railroad. What I'm saying is, we would love for you, if you don't make it professional, and the chances are, you know, slim to none, that if you do think about a job in finance, man, and Rachel, you think about UBS. You think about possibly coming to the place where you saw an institution as big and as bold as UBS in your schools teaching financial literacy. I feel like athletes are really great future employees, given the right circumstances and the right resources. We're coachable. Usually we're on time. We take criticism really well, and we work in teams, obviously. And I would love for that to transform into the finance industry. So as I said earlier, the finance industry is predominantly middle-aged white men. If we can start getting our brightest stars within these HBCUs thinking about different jobs within banking, we're going to have the thing that you talked about earlier about, Van, of having opportunities and having our community be in the places where you or me or Rachel can choose from a vast number of different type of financial advisors within our own community. And this is kind of the work that we're doing with this partnership with the SIAC. But ultimately, it's about teaching financial education, getting UBS at least in places where we need to be. And I want the firm to show, and this is maybe why I said this to you, man, is we know at the end of the day, these might not be future clients from a athletic perspective, but they may be future doctors, future lawyers, engineers, teachers, professors, whatever it is that we would love to have as clients, not just because they were, you know, athletes. So that was why I love this partnership.
So first of all, I mean, that's a great, I mean, look, actually that was that, you know, shut me up. Like I think, and also another great thing about that is those athletes seeing you being able to do that will give them a different, you don't always have to, you know, go back home and open up a barbecue place or something like that. You should have chose the SWAC, though. I don't know why y'all didn't choose the SWAC. All right, you SWAC.
It's never too late, you know.
It's never too late. Get on with the SWAC. SWAC is the best. So I got two more questions for you, not financial stuff. One is about football, and then one is about culture. Okay. All right, football. You were one of the most menacing people on the field while you played. Great career. You know, a great, amazing career that you had. You just said that the football always finds the weakest link on the field. Mm-hmm. My question for you is, as an NFL football player, former Pro Bowler, was there one player that you went up against that wasn't that good, but for some reason always had success against you? Somebody that's not like a perennial Pro Bowler. I'm not talking about Jonathan Ogden. Oh, I'm not talking about, you know, any of those guys. I'm talking about like a guy who is just a guy on the field, but for some reason, he just always blocked you up.
Yep. I have a guy. And I don't even know why I wouldn't even want to say his name, man. I don't even want to just, because it's just harvest. It's just, I have nightmares about this, but, let me say this first. I think everybody that makes it to the NFL is actually a pretty good player and is amazing in their own right. But there was a guy named Mark Tauscher, offensive tackle for the Green Bay Packers. Man, I hope he doesn't see this, but he was just the fattest, sloppiest. I mean, I would. I can't even mimic. He wouldn't. He would just move like this, and I'd be like, "Yo, I'm about to eat this dude up for lunch," you know. And every game, it's just. I think his technique was so bad that I trained for good technique, and it was just so bad that it worked. Like it was like I couldn't get anything done, and I'd watch. You know, film on him, and people will be tearing him up. I'm like, oh, it was like he had my number. So, Mark Tauscher, for the Green Bay Packers, man. He's that one guy, and he was actually a good player, but just if you saw him, there's just no way I should not have dominated him the way I wanted to. So, and I saw him twice a year, so it started getting mental for me after a while. Like, I started getting like intimidated at a guy, and he was just a fat, sloppy Joe in a uniform, man. It was bad. It was real bad.
Right.
Okay.
Rachel?
Last question I'll ask you is a money question. I feel like when people deal with wealth management, or maybe they come to you or whatever, they say, I want you to make me rich. Is that how people come to you? And if it is, should they manage their expectations? Because if you do make people rich, then I definitely do need to come make an appointment. But should they manage their expectations when whoever they're talking to? Because I feel like that's the misconception. It's like, you're going to make me rich.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's, I think the it should be reverse. Like, don't make me broke. How about that? Like, help me not to lose this money.
Got you.
And because what I've made so far has been good and I can live off of this, but don't screw it up. That should be the mindset. So if you come from that perspective, the advisor now is going to be conservative, do, you know, bunch singles, you know, doubles, triples. He doesn't need to hit the home run. Rachel, you're the home run. You've already hit the home run. Man, you're the home run. So now a couple, yeah, you are. So just know that, you know, singles and bunts are okay for the rest of your life. And if you do, you know, have, you know, a unicorn or something that just something that's been so big and adds to your wealth, great. But again, your advisor should have the mentality of not losing what you earned from hard work and dedication.
So last question.
Okay, man.
You're Nigerian.
Yeah.
And there's something that goes on Twitter that I love to get all of my West Africans riled up about. All my West African friends. Shout out to Wale. Shout out to Cass.
Is this about rice or something?
It's about rice.
Jollof.
It's about jollof rice.
What is this?
Oh my God, Rachel, we just stumbled onto something so great. So there's a dish in West Africa. Was it jollof or jollof?
Jollof rice.
But here's the thing about this dish.
Jollof rice.
The thing about this dish is like every different country makes it their own. See, in Louisiana, we claim gumbo. If you're making gumbo from Mississippi, we don't care because it don't matter what's in your gumbo. If you're making gumbo in Texas, even if your family from Louisiana, every generation removed from Louisiana, your gumbo gets more trash. So it don't matter if you're making gumbo in Houston or in Galveston. It don't matter if you make a gumbo in Alabama. If the gumbo not coming straight from home, we don't care. Right. But jollof is different.
Yeah.
Everybody has their own way of doing it.
Yep.
Everybody has their claim to fame.
Man.
And there seems to be no clear consensus whose jollof is the best.
There's a clear consensus.
What's the clear?
I'm not trying to be a homer on this one. Nigerian jollof rice is the best by far, by far. I'm not going to hate on Ghana jollof rice. Ghana's is decent. But I would go Nigerian jollof rice. Then Senegal has some real good rice.
Right. But, give me the power ranking then. That's good. Give me the jollof rice power ranking then. See if you got, what is it, 3-4 countries in there that you could throw in there.
I would go top two, Nigeria, for sure. Mm-hmm. Then Senegal is 3. Ghana, probably 4. And I don't think there's anybody else that even should come into the equation.
Why is Nigerian the best? I still haven't had it. I'm trying to have it out in L.A. Why is Nigerian jollof the best?
How do you not have it? How do you not have it?
I haven't had it yet. I don't know where to go.
We love rice as people. How do you not have jollof rice? I don't get it. You've had fried rice, right? I'm sure. You had Chinese fried rice, right? I'm sure. You've had that.
Yeah. I've had it.
Sure. Right. So, like I say, no. I just think the spices, and I mean, again, it's almost like you know, it is. It's just it's family food for me. You know, I can't even being here in America, you know, born and raised here, I can't have a Thanksgiving without jollof rice. It'd be like a turkey, mashed potatoes. It'd be all like stuffing, all that stuff, and a pan of jollof rice. Everyone looking like, what are you doing here? Like, well, that's part of my Thanksgiving. That's part of my Thanksgiving. So, again, I'm not even playing around. Nigerian jollof rice is the best. Ghanaians will fight you on that, but they're not even two. They're three to me.
Whoa!
Well, they were four. No. You had them at four.
Yeah, they're all four. They're four. Nigerians top two. So, you know, one, the spicy one is one. The unspicy one is two. Then, you know, Senegal's three. And Ghana four. You guys like spicy food or no?
Let the jollof wars commence. There it is.
Yeah,
My brother. I promise Antoine I'm going to sign them papers as soon as I get back to LA. like I've been dragging on it a little.
Yeah, that's what he sent me on this podcast for, is to get you to sign these papers. Going from every angle.
Right, like seriously, they emailed him and then they mailed them with the thing like printed out for me to just sign and then send back, and I still forgot to do it before I get back to Hawaii. Rachel, Friday, I signed the papers.
I'll sign before you.
Rachel, get your man. You know?
All right, my brother. We appreciate you joining us today on Higher Learning.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate
it. Okay, so it doesn't seem that Derek Chauvin is letting his conviction go. He has filed a motion for a new trial. He is alleging jury misconduct. The motion alleges that the court abused its discretion by denying the request for a change in venue and a new trial. Because the court failed to sequester the jurors or admonish them to avoid all media, the lawyer says that they were subjected to not only prejudicial publicity, but to jury intimidation or potential fear of retribution. I think that we knew that Derek Chauvin wasn't done fighting this.
Sure.
Did you read this, and do you have a reaction to him trying to get a new trial?
I'm not shocked that he's going to fight for an appeal, that he's trying to get a new trial. Those things don't shock me. I think the shocking thing was more of this juror that has come out. Did you just mention that?
No. What did the juror say? I didn't see that.
Okay. So there's a juror who, it has come out that there are pictures of him, I believe they were on social, attending a march on Washington wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt. And they're trying to use that a part of evidence for the new trial, saying that there was he was impartial and Derek Chauvin could not get a fair trial. I believe that's the case. That's one of the things. I think there were eight things that they put in their motion, and I think that was one of them. Please forgive me if that is wrong. And basically, they're fighting this. Now, here's the thing. Obviously, there were multiple black people on the jury. During voir dire, which is where they question the jurors, they give them a questionnaire, they ask them certain things. In Texas, we say voir dire because there's a Southern accent on it.
Voir dire?
It's voir dire. It's French
voir
word.
Voir dire? Why is it voir dire?
Oh, gosh. Why my law school isn't going to tell me. I can't remember what it means.
Voir dire? I just learned something new. Voir dire. Voir dire?
To speak the truth in French is what it means. So it's process.
Can I be honest with you? Just real quick before we move on. Why can't we name the shit normal shit?
You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Where it comes from. Didn't start recently.
What's the process that they're going through? You're questioning the jurors.
Voir dire.
No, but what is actually happening during voir dire? What's actually happening?
You're questioning the jury.
Why can't we call it questioning the jury time? Jury questioning time
doesn't sound as nice.
I hate
jury
it.
Questioning. Questioning time.
Voir dire.
Do you hate it because you didn't know?
I know. I hate it because it's hooptity dipity. There's so many things in the law.
In the law spoken from someone who's not a lawyer. What do you
right.
mean?
There's so many things in the law that we just don't know what they mean. And this is the way they fuck us with this shit.
No,
they create
it's a cultural, like learning a new. No, it's like learning a new word. There's certain words that you don't know what they mean.
A writ of habeas corpus.
Like, name it the shit. Like,
Latin.
Name it
There's
the shit.
There's a lot of Latin. There's a lot of
well,
Latin.
What I'm saying is name it the stuff so we, the electorate, the people, can better understand. If someone told me right now, yo, Van, it's as a juror, you got to go through voir dire, I would be like, I don't want to go through that because that sounds ominous. It's just
it is.
So during Voyage, my dear, what happened to this guy?
So anybody who goes through it, when you get called in to jury duty, you go through this process where they ask you questions to determine if the defendant can get a fair and impartial trial. So they ask you certain questions. So obviously in the trial of Derek Chauvin, there were going to be questions about race and policing and Black Lives Matter and George Floyd and protests and demonstrations. And to my knowledge, these are questions that were presented to all the jurors, potential jurors, including the juror that's at issue. Forgive me, I do not know his name. And he answered those questions. I think what's at issue is apparently on one of the questionnaires, he said that he had never attended a protest or a demonstration. And I think that what's about police brutality, he said that he had not been a part of it. Well, the March on Washington wasn't necessarily that. And the fact that he's wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt shouldn't matter because he's just saying that he matters and so does his life. He's not saying only, he's saying too as well. Let's not forget that. And if you're asking this man to take off a shirt where he's just simply trying to value his life, you would never have anybody Black on the jury. You'd be hard pressed to find somebody Black on your jury who doesn't believe that Black Lives Matter.
No, so, you could do it.
I said hard pressed. I'm saying it's not impossible. I'm saying it'd be hard. Harder. Anyways, listen, I'm not here to debate you over that. The point is they're trying to now use this as a reason to get a new trial. I would have loved to have someone on because obviously we didn't see the questioning of the jury time, as you want to call it, process.
Oh, dear.
We didn't watch it. But I'm just curious as to, I'd love to talk to someone about like what this means. What's the next step? Obviously, they're going to call this. The judge is probably going to call this juror in. He's going to ask him questions. He's going to ask him if he could be impartial. He's going to ask him what his involvement was with protests and demonstrations. They're going to pull his questionnaire. They're going to see if he lied on anything. They're going to re-question him on those kinds of things. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. I don't think that's enough evidence to overturn. That sole thing is not enough to grant him a new trial, in my opinion. And also, that's the defense's fault for not doing their due diligence in flushing out these jurors. Mm-hmm. You've seen Runaway Jury. They find out all this information on the potential jurors. If that was on his social, that's something that they should have seen. They decided to let this man be a part of the jury. And now they want to use it against him. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
I care more about the people watching this story and viewing this story and how they feel about it. Be undaunted. White supremacy is not going down without a fight. So it, you know, Derek Chauvin is, if they don't see it the way that we see it. And so we shouldn't expect them to go out without flailing. They're going to flail. They are going to use every single legal option in their arsenal, to get the best possible outcome for Derek. What we should remember, what we should do is keep our eyes on the issue as it is up there, which is the death of George Floyd, and what we have to do to make sure that these things don't happen again. Don't be triggered by this. Be aware of it.
We knew it was coming.
So chill. Let's take a break. We'll come back with something else. All right. So Warner Brothers is on a search. They need a Black man. Warner Brothers needs a Black man. That's how they should do this, by the way. They should do an open casting call. They're like, because they're looking for the new Superman, right? It's going to be a Black Superman.
I thought it was supposed to be Michael B. Jordan. Was that just a rumor?
It still might be Michael B. Jordan. But remember, they had spoken to Michael B. Jordan about being Superman before this. Okay? So it might be Michael B. Jordan. But they are letting people know, maybe in case Michael is dragging his feet, or in case they didn't like what they just saw from Michael B. Jordan in Without Remorse. Michael B. Jordan just had a movie that came out on Amazon Prime. So maybe they're cooling off on Michael B. Jordan. I'm not saying that that's true.
Are you saying it was a bad movie?
No, I enjoyed it. But I'm just saying you never know the way the studio looks at something. So for I'll say this though, I'll say for that movie to have come out like last week, and for them to for this news to break now, it's weird. Mm. I enjoyed Without Remorse.
I really did.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was cool. Like it. I'm looking forward to the Rainbow Six movie, but just yeah, I would have thought that the rumors, if the rumors were hitting the trades, I would have thought that the rumors would have been, yo, Michael B. Jordan is getting close to being Superman. Maybe he doesn't even want to do Superman. Who knows? Yeah. So Warner Brothers is looking for a black Superman. Sources are saying that they're trying to do it. Okay. Michael B. Jordan has said that he's flattered to be in the competition, but he said in some interviews recently, I'm seeing it right now, that he's just watching on this one, that he's not probably going to be a black Superman. Okay. So the question is, who would you want to see as the black Superman?
I knew you were going to ask me this. Okay.
If not Michael B. Jordan.
So my first pick would be, but I think he's a little too old for it, is Idris.
It's not going to happen.
I know. Hold on. I'm looking. Do you have a person? Don't tell me. Hold on. I could see them making it. The Bridgerton guy.
You really think they will go with him?
I could see it. He crosses over. I could just see him being a part of it. He's got the body, right? That's part of it.
He's got the body. You think he's got a Superman
body? He's got the
body?
Height. Mm. I honestly, from what I've seen the pictures, I don't watch Bridgerton, so I'm not really sure. But he's around the age. Got to be a little younger. I think he's a person that if it was announced it was him, everybody would love it. Majority of people would love him.
They would love him as Superman. Here's the thing that people don't understand about Superman.
See, and this is where you lose me.
You don't even know what I'm about to say.
I know it's going to be like deeply rooted in your knowledge about Superman, and that's why I say you lose me. I don't mean it in a negative way. I just mean like I'm not on that level. Right? Okay. This is Ringerverse talk.
Ringerverse. Midnight Boys. A-pew-pew! and the House of Mal. Every Friday and Tuesday on The Ringer. You want to hear Nura talk, me and Charles Holm, the Midnight Boys, a-pew-pew! And then the House of Mal on Tuesday. This is the thing about Superman, and this is a testament to Christopher Reeve's talent. It is, in my opinion, one of the most difficult roles to play.
Why?
Because of the dichotomy in the two characters. This was pointed out so brilliantly in a Kill Bill 2 monologue written by Quentin Tarantino. Superman himself is all-powerful and all-confident. He is super confident. He's charming. He's straight-backed. He's sure of himself. He is polite. He is, at the same time, strong. There's a strength to Superman. He looks at you. He nods. When he gets there, everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Clark Kent is the polar opposite. Clark Kent doesn't know anything for sure. Clark Kent is chasing behind Lois Lane. Clark Kent is always in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that's Superman actually projecting that so that people don't think Kent is Superman. Mm-hmm. Now, in recent movies, they've gone away from this. They've gone away from Superman, and they've gone away from the Clark Kent thing a little bit more. Now Clark Kent is just a guy, and Superman is just more of a guy. Mm-hmm. I think that people will see a black Superman, that they can handle a black Superman. I think that. I don't think people can handle a black Clark Kent. I think that there is a mysticism and really a fetishization around black men in this country to where American audiences have trouble seeing them as vulnerable. Like American audiences have difficulty.
Oh my gosh, it's so interesting you say this.
Like American audiences have difficulty seeing like black nerds, seeing black men in search of their feelings, seeing black, like they only want to see the mythos of the black Superman. the black guy who can sleep with any woman, the black guy who can solve any problem. The Shaft meets I Am Legend meets fucking, I don't know, whoever else you throw out there. All of these different dudes who are ass kickers. Either that or we just clowning, right? So it's either weird. But even in comedy, when you have a comedic role by a black man, by a black lead, even that's like a thing because there's power in being able to make somebody laugh that much. One of the most powerful performances I've ever seen is Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop because that movie is not a comedy unless he's in it. Every single scene, he is grabbing and ripping the laughter right out of you. So he's got power on screen. So I think the dichotomy between Superman and Clark Kent is not whether or not we can make you believe that a black man is Superman, is whether or not we can make you believe that a black man is Clark Kent and the dichotomy between those two characters.
It's so interesting that you say that. I interviewed Anthony Mackie the other day. He's got a part of this new project called Solos, which is brilliant, by the way, and everybody should check that out. And it's all about these solo performances. And and without giving anything away, he's playing himself in this script. And one of the first things he says to me in talking is that a lot of times black actors are not given roles where they're allowed to be vulnerable and you're allowed to see. And so now in hearing that, and so in this project that he was in, he was able to do that. You see him go through a range of emotions and it's really a beautiful performance. Now I think it should be Anthony Mackie. I know all that Captain America stuff, but now I'm like, Anthony Mackie.
No, you don't. You can't. No, you no. Hell no.
Anthony Mackie. Because he gets what you were saying about the Clark Kent.
No, no.
No, we don't like him? Okay.
Well, I like Anthony Mackie, but number one, he's a little too old right now to play Superman.
What's the age range of Superman?
So Superman is normally shown to be around 32, 33 years old.
Because I feel like Christopher Reeves was kind of old playing him.
No, he wasn't. You're wrong about that. But
I just remember him looking old. Sorry.
He looked old to you because you were a baby and he was a grown-up man. He was born to play the part. So that is what it is.
I'm not taking that away from him. I'm just talking about the age.
No, I know. But he was born to play the part. So he's like even an outlier. But yeah. You want to start this guy. You want this guy to be probably between 28 and 34 because you also, if you want a franchise, you want 5-10 years with the character. You know what I mean? So you don't want a guy that's going to be...
Really thought about this.
It's not really thought about. It's like if you start a guy who's 43 as Superman, then you got a movie, 2 years a sequel, 2 years a sequel. By the end, he's 50 and it's tough. Anyway,
okay,
get off.
Who is your pick then?
I think there are a lot of guys out there right now that could do it.
Okay, name one.
I'm wondering, Yahya Abdul.
That's good. Do you think he's not well known enough to do it?
I think it's better when Superman's a little bit less well known.
Okay,
because I think for me, you gotta fucking get somebody who can grow into the character. Speaking of that, moving off Superman to another superhero. Marvel came out with they had a whole sizzle reel of teasers, and we're going to go deeper into this on Ringerverse Fridays with me and Charles Holmes, the Midnight Boys, pew pew.
Midnight Boys.
I haven't felt stronger about my idea that Black Panther should be recast than I do right now.
Speak on it.
So Black Panther Wakanda Forever is coming out July 8th, 2022. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about the movie. Very excited about the movie. There's not going to be any Chadwick Boseman in the movie. He wasn't able to tape anything before we lost him. But I think it's doing the character of T'Challa. Not Black Panther. Black Panther is a mantle. Sure, he can be Black Panther, and that'll be amazing to see her as Black Panther. But the character of T'Challa himself is doing such a disservice to the character to not continue his journey. And this is a big comic nerd thing. T'Challa represents, there's so much story behind the character. T'Challa represents really the spirit of Wakanda integrating their belief of themselves into what the role that the Wakandans are going to play in the larger world is. He represents, like, in a lot of ways, he represents the, how can I put this? The struggle of worldwide blackness. Mm. Like, I can help. They won't let me help. Should I help? Have they done enough? Has this world done enough to warrant my participation in it? More to the point. That's what T'Challa mm-hmm. represents. And as much as I am gutted by the death of Chadwick Boseman, it's like it's the character itself, the story itself, the ideal itself, it's got to be more than one guy.
Mm-hmm.
It is, and also, this is me also talking to the film-going audiences as well. This is me talking to us culturally. All right, I get that people just got to know T'Challa, but a lot of us have been reading it since we were a kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we got to be able to move on and keep these stories going. We do, because there have been several Batmans. There have been several Spider-Mans. They sure. recast the Joker after the part was cemented by Heath Ledger, right? No one will ever be T'Challa like Chadwick Boseman was. No one will. They won't. Like he, to me, is my T'Challa,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Keaton is my Batman. Christopher Reeve is my Superman. You know, other people have different people, you know?
Right.
But the stories have to go on. You want T'Challa for your kids, and you want T'Challa for their kids. You want T'Challa to have to watch Shuri be Black Panther. You know, it's just an important character, and I understand how everybody feels. I feel the same way, but I don't think we're doing the right thing by erasing that character. I really don't. It's something that's unpopular to say, but I don't think we're doing the right thing by erasing the character.
I think you made your point. I obviously, you know, I don't know the history. I didn't even know about T'Challa until the movie, you know, was announced, but I get it. It makes perfect sense to me. And now I want to see it. Listen, I mean, I don't know who's making the decisions, but get that idea going, because that makes all the sense in the world about especially when you compare it to other people, other characters, other that we've seen in movies and or comics. So make it happen.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Either way, though, I'll be pleased, because I know Ryan and them. I know that Shuri's a fantastic character and Black Panther is going to be great. But man.
Maybe it's just that it's too soon to watch him in this movie,
yeah.
And we can see him in another movie. Yeah.
All right. Let some time pass. All right. So we're going to play a new game here on Higher Learning. It's called Who's Fucked Up? All right. In this episode of Who's Fucked Up, it's starring Aubrey Drake Graham and a singer named Naomi Sharon. All right. Naomi Sharon is a singer. She's just moving up the ranks. Apparently, she sounds a little bit like Georgia. Is it Georgia or Georgia? Georgia Smith? Don't know. But she's fine. Like, if you go on Instagram, not just beautiful, but the thickness. Sometimes they're so thick that you lose the H and it's just tick. You know,
wow.
It's T-I-C-C, thickness.
Wow.
And you guys know that Drake is a sucker for some thickness. So apparently, we don't know this to be true. This is unconfirmed, but there are shenanigans
Correct.
That are being alleged by her fiance. The fiance went on Instagram and posted this message. Imagine having the most beautiful, supportive, and faithful relationship 8 years long with an engagement and a wedding plan. A beautiful woman on your side is ride or die. Then this major opportunity comes and a world star calls your fiance to sign a record deal, flies you both out, and then out of nowhere, the trust is vanished with knives in your back and in your heart. this guy is a legend that Naomi and him flew out to meet with Drake, and the meeting with Drake lasted a little bit longer for Naomi than the meeting with the fiance did. He's saying that Drake broke up their relationship. Now, let's say that we assume that this happened.
Okay.
Let's say we assume that this went the way the fiance said it went. Okay. The question is, who's fucked up? Is it, obviously Naomi is fucked up, but is Drake fucked up for having done this if this is true?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Drake is in a position of power in this situation. This is a woman who clearly doesn't have the platform, the backing, the musical history. She's wrong. Let me just say this. Wait a second.
Come on, keep on.
No, I am. She is wrong. But you asked me about Drake. Okay, she's definitely wrong. You're asking me about Drake. Is Drake wrong? Drake is not definitely not innocent in this by any means. I think sometimes people underestimate the power that they have over someone who, this is a woman who is trying to get on his level, who is thrilled at the fact that he has taken an interest in her, has flown her out, her fiance out, and is possibly going to collaborate with her. This is, as her fiance said, the biggest break, life-changing. If she's in a position, a vulnerable position where she's trying to, you like the words that I'm using, vulnerable? Mm-hmm. She's wrong. Right. But I'm just saying he has to know that he has some sort of influence on her, knowing that he has what she wants and he is in a position to give it to her. You can't take that away from the situation.
Nah, he's in a position to give it to her, all right. So,
he ain't innocent.
So I'm... The percentage of wrong here.
I can't do that.
You have to.
50-50.
How could it be 50-50?
Takes two. I'm just going to break it down. I can't do any of these percentages, right? We weren't in the room. I'm not going to put more on her. Why? Because she was engaged? Like, Drake is a grown man. They both were wrong in this situation.
Drake is definitely wrong. He's definitely wrong. He is 10% wrong.
They're both dirty. She's like,
he's 10% wrong for the reason why he's 10% wrong. He's 10% wrong. He's 10% wrong. He's 10% wrong.
Go ahead,
break
it down.
Wrong.
Tell me how you came up with 10.
This is why I came up with 10.
Wow.
The way I came up with 10 is that if she's in a relationship, right? It's her responsibility to her relationship to be faithful to her guy.
Correct.
Drake is just another dude trying to get to her. At the end of the day, I mean, I have to give her more credit as a human being to be able to make decisions. she's a grown-up human being.
I'm not giving either one of them credit. That's the thing. That's why I'm making it 50-50.
Drake is a big deal, but she can't say no to Drake.
And so could he.
He could, but he doesn't have. He's not in a relationship though. So why would he?
Oh, so what? Oh, so just because he's not in a relationship, he has no responsibility in all of this. Like, does he not?
No. He has. If you want to look at Drake,
10% responsibility.
He does 10% responsibility. If you want to look at Drake and say it's wrong for him to shoot at a girl that's like in a relationship, knowing that she's in a relationship, of course.
He didn't just shoot at her. It's alleged that they were intimate, correct?
No, when I said shoot at, I mean, you know, shoot the game and whatever like that.
Yeah, but, I know.
And fly her up. Drake flies girls up probably weekly.
That's not what he flew her up for. Those girls, they're flying up with he flew her up for professionally.
So let's separate two things here, because I do think you have a point. If you're telling me right now that it's wrong for Drake to fly somebody up under the auspices of working together and then use that relationship to sleep with them, like if somebody doesn't really want to work with you musically and they say, yo, let's get together on some music stuff, and then they use that to sleep with you, that's wrong, okay? So that in and of itself, that's wrong. I don't like that. If that's what's happened, if that's what,
yeah, we
what,
don't
what
know.
Happened.
We'll wait for we a single know. To come out. If it never like, comes out,
like we don't. That's wrong. That's wrong. To that's manipulative and all of that stuff. Whatever. But let's just say that. Forget about that part. The part about them having a relationship that's more than that, about the cheating aspect of her on her fiance, that doesn't have very much to do with Drake. That has to do with her and how and what she's doing with her relationship, does it not?
No.
Okay.
If he flew her out there with the intention to make to possibly sign her, to make music with her, to collaborate with her, and then ends up sleeping with her, it's the same type of wrong. And I'm not saying she's innocent either. I feel like you're looking at this more of I'm blaming him and not her. I'm blaming them both. They're both dirty for this situation. And there's one victim in this, and that's the fiance.
I know, but there's only one person that was in a relationship. There was only that one person's responsibility. Nothing. There was it's only
so you
one
are saying Drake doesn't have responsibility. You
no,
are.
No. I am telling you right this. Drake is a single man. Drake doesn't really have a responsibility.
He has a responsibility to respect somebody's relationship, especially when you flew her fiance out as well, knowing she was in this relationship, knowing that she is eager. She is eager. She is excited.
Wait.
She probably was like, I'll do anything to work with you, Drake.
So see, now, that is, you're conflating things. What you're saying is that he's wrong for using his position and power as Drake
to
sleep with women.
I
would say that he probably, and I couldn't say this for sure, but I'd say he probably uses his position and power as Drake to sleep with women all the time.
Right, but that's different. That's different than, I saw her at the club. I met her on Instagram. This is somebody you apparently flew out for the purpose, for a professional purpose. At least that's what the fiance is saying.
Let me ask you a question. If she was single and he had flown her out for a professional purpose and they ended up sleeping together,
we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
But the question is, would that be wrong?
It's a good question.
By that rationale,
it depends how it went down.
Berry Gordy and Diana Ross.
It depends how it went down.
That happens all the time.
Right. It depends the woman's mindset. It depends his mindset. Because you do have to realize that, and it could be flip-flop. The woman could have the power. You do have to realize
happens all the time too.
When you are in a position of power, the person who doesn't have that, there's a different type of feeling that comes with that. There's a different type of pressure. When you have power, you're exerting a certain type of pressure, maybe without even knowing it, on the other person. That person who wants so badly to work with you or to do whatever it is with you.
No. I get that. If you are, first of all, we should also say that there are a lot of women who just straight up want to sleep with Drake.
Like that's absolutely
right. So it's not the same situation. There are a lot of women who just want to sleep with Drake, right? My thing is, if you're either person, you want to believe that you can go up to Canada with Drake, with your fiance, and that even though Drake wants to sleep with her, that she wouldn't do it.
So let me tell you this.
Sure.
She goes up there. Drake flies her out. They're in the studio. He's listening to her music and he's telling her it's good. And then he makes a move on her. Okay.
That's not how it happens. Okay, you know how
whatever.
It happens? Can I tell you how it happens real quick?
Go ahead.
So it's Drake, her, and the fiance in the studio and they making music. And the fiance is like, yo, bro, she's got a really good tone. She's got a really good voice. Like, listen, this is why she's the next big thing. And Drake is like, yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. The only thing that would make this situation a little bit better is if I had some of my favorite wings from Wings and Things down on road in Southeast Toronto. It's like right around the corner. But the only problem is that, you know, they don't do Postmates. And they're open for about an hour more. We have some wings. We have energy. We record through the night, but they don't have Postmates. And I sent my assistant home. And the fiance is like, oh, no problem. No problem, bro. No problem. If you put it in the phone, if you put it in the thing, I'll go get it. Yeah. You guys just stay here. I want to break y'all flow. You guys stay here. I want to break y'all flow. I'll go to Wings and Things real quick, and I'll get what you take. Yeah. I like my chicken wings red and spicy. and I like the drumsticks thick. And then the fiance looks at him like, I'm not so sure why you said that. And in the back of his mind, he's thinking, you know, my girl is kind of red and spicy and thick like a drumstick, but whatever. And then so he goes, okay, cool. And Drake goes, yeah, you stop and get, you know, a 50 Henny from the liquor store. Which liquor store? I don't know. Find one. And then he's gone. And then boom, as soon as he leaves, Drake stops recording her and he puts on the drinks in the gym for the whole damn week. Seven and ten, it's just so deep. You got it, girl. You got it. He starts dancing, talking about when he recorded this. Before you know it, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. That's how it happens. If you're going to tell a story about how it happens, how it happens.
You're right. It's my bad for leaving out the details. Listen, all I'm saying is, now I forgot what I was going to say. I lost it somewhere around wings and things. I lost it.
You were saying that he flies her up there.
Well, listen, I'm just saying, if you're in a certain position, and I'm not saying anybody, I just think with the power and the pressure, there's this fear of, well, what if he's making a move? What if I say no? Do I lose this deal?
You couldn't be more right. But like what I'm, that in a, that, well, that would mean then, and this is a separate conversation, that would mean that Drake could then never get at somebody not on his level that wants to work with him, which I believe, by the way.
Yeah, it complicates
I believe that you're getting yourself in trouble if you fucking the interns or if you're doing any of that stuff. I believe that, right? Yeah. But it happens all the time, sure. Right? Mariah Carey married Tommy Mottola, who was the head of Sony at that time. Diana Ross had a relationship with Berry Gordy. Celine Dion ended up being married to her manager or something like that. It happens all the time in different situations. It happens. But I'm talking about strictly the sanctity of their relationship. And this is a broader question. Is it up to Drake to uphold the sanctity of their relationship together?
I would like to think that he would do that. Mm. But, okay. But, you know, at the end of the day, I get what you're saying. She's in it. It's 8 years. That's your fiance. You know what y'all been through, ups and downs, the support, all of that. So, yeah, that it holds more weight because you know things that he doesn't. But they both wrong. 50-50. You're losing. You're losing this numbers game. You're losing it. Stop doing numbers. Stop doing percentages. Stop doing millions. Stop.
I'm not losing. I think that really what I'm looking at in this situation is I'm looking at two adult people, one person who's single, one person who's in a relationship. Now, if you believe that it's wrong to be with somebody that's in a relationship, I get that. Not everybody thinks that, though. Not everybody feels that way.
Okay. Well, we know how Drake feels.
Well, we don't, because these are all allegations. But I will tell you this, though. I do feel bad for the fiance, though. I just don't know 100%. In any way. I don't know in any way why he would put this on Instagram. I just can't
he's
think.
Jaded,
not in a million
he's
years.
Angry. He's upset. He's probably trying to call out Drake. Like he wants people. No, people are not going to turn on Drake for this. Drake's going to make a song out of it. Like we, you know, it's you never know what you're going to do when you're angry. I feel bad for him. He don't have anybody else to turn to. So he turned to the public, I guess.
Turn to the public eye. All right. All right, it's mailbag time. Mailbag, let's go. Trudy, come on.
You always said that. You didn't let the song play.
Oh, let's let my joint rock real quick. Mailbag time. Time to read your letters and then we'll reply to them. Oh, it's mailbag time. Write us with your queries and we'll chime in. Let's do it. Mailbag time. Come on.
Okay. This is from Audrey Beth. What song takes you back to your college days?
Woo!
I know for Rachel what song it is.
What?
Is that Limp Bizkit, that rolling, 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 rolling.
I'm not
rolling.
Playing with you.
We keep rolling,
anything,
rolling, rolling,
anything
rolling.
Anything that has Lil Jon in it. That's straight college for me. Scrappy, Lil Jon, yin yang twins. That's all college. Mm.
So two songs. I need a hot girl. two songs. I need a hot girl and fuck the mother niggas. Those two songs really take. But
that actually reminds me of college too, because that's a big Delta Stress song.
Yeah, that reminds me of college, but also some other joints like NSYNC, Gone. NSYNC was popping. I hate y'all. I love NSYNc, but I tell you why. I hate y'all. You know what else reminds me of college? I'll be straight up. Nickelback, how you remind me? Because y'all fronting. Y'all are liars.
No, when people all say of you take are me back liars. To college, I think the club. That's all right. That pops up in my head. So I'm like, what was I something. Dancing to? What when, table, how you remind couch, me, DJ booth?
When How You Remind Me was out, if that shit would have come on in the club, everybody in that bitch would have been singing. Like, people try to act like they were cool as time goes on. Newsflash, all of you loved Nickelback. All of you loved that song. I wasn't the only person that thought that song was dope and got excited when it came on the radio. Everybody liked How You Remind Me.
I don't know who you're preaching to. Nobody's arguing with you. You're having a moment everybody all liked by yourself.
Higher. All by Creed. Ooh,
now that was the jam.
Everybody liked Higher by Creed. Everybody liked Train, Drops of Jupiter. Everybody liked all of these records. Now you want to echo, oh, shucks. No, it doesn't. Who? You're just the one you're trying to be cool.
You're fighting with yourself. What's the next question?
This is from Nikki Sampedro. What's a habit you have that you thought was normal but only realized was kind of weird later in life?
Peeling off the sides of the peeling off the skin on the sides of my fingers.
Is that a nervous habit?
Yeah.
But like, do you peeling bite? Do you skin, bite it? Like, no, I know other people actually who do that. Do you bite it?
Right.
Do you bite?
I sometimes bite and then peel. I bite and then it'll get bloody and then I'll hold it and wait for a good scab to form because a good scab is more fun to pick. And then I'll pick it off and then, yeah. Right. Yeah. All over. It's the more nervous I am, the more I do it.
I can't think of one. I don't have any weird habits.
You don't have any real weird habits? You have zero weird habits?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to come back.
So
you don't think
habitually sending television hosts to the soup line is
I can't think of one. Mm-mm.
Poor guy. All right. One more.
Okay. So I guess apparently it's National Teacher Week. So who is the teacher that inspired or impacted you the most?
It's two. One was Mr. Campanella.
We talked about one of them.
And one was Mr. Campanella. There was Mr. Gebauer. There was actually a couple. There was Mr. Neubauer, who was a sixth grade teacher, who let me direct my first play. There was Mr. Campanella, who was a shop teacher, who is the first grown-up besides my parents that I ever disappointed, which was a very important moment in my life. But there was one teacher in the seventh grade named Miss Watchery. I wasn't doing my work. This is kind of a disgusting story. So one day I was brushing my hair, and when I was brushing my hair as a seventh grader, a dandruff was getting on my desk. And I noticed this, and I didn't know that people actually had dandruff. I didn't know what dandruff was. And so I kept doing it, and all the kids in the class were laughing, right? So it was funny to me. I kept doing it to where it was, like, bad. Right, it was bad. Like even my boy Chris was like, "Van, man, you got a dry scalp, bro. Like, you have a super dry scalp." Like, it was bad. Because remember, here's the thing about my parents' relationship: is my parents were fighting so much that there were little things like that that I never got taught.
Right.
Right. Like my dad would say, "Hey, wash your hair." So I would take like some soap and run it through my hair real quick. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't really washing my hair. Mm-hmm. Like I knew I would brush my teeth and like do all that stuff. But they were, when your parents are like that dysfunctional, there are little things like that. Like nobody, my dad never taught me how to like brush my hair right. He never taught me how to dress. He never taught me how to do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm doing that and I'm thinking that's funny, right? And I'm obviously going to get in trouble. She kept me after class, Ms. Watcher. She kept me after class. She's like, first of all, that's obviously disgusting. And she looked around. She was like, you know, I see how you be looking at the little girls in the class. She was like, you think any of these little girls gonna like you now? Now you just made yourself the dirty dude and you gonna be the dirty dude. And I was like, well, what do I have to do? She was like, what you have to do is be a man. She said, you have to come in here as a man and comport yourself as a man. That means do your work. That means clown, but get serious when it's time to get serious. It's like too many of you boys out there is just playing. She was like, if you get out on the street right now, look at you. Look how tall and big you are. They're not going to know you from any other dude on the street. He's like, there's a time to play. I love your energy and your spirit, but there's also a time for you to have yourself together like as a man. She challenged me. Black lady.
What grade?
Like challenged me. But I was in the seventh wow. grade. She challenged me, black lady, named Ms. Watry, Earth Science. Mm. And she was like, now clean that up off my desk and I'm going to tell you what you need to do. You tell your mama, go down there and you get this stuff called Head and Soldiers, Head and Shoulders. And she was like, when you wash your hair, she was like, comb through it with a comb and go in there. And I remember that night, I was so surprised at my body. It was caked up. It was like I had never washed my hair before. And I remember getting out and my scalp felt so much better. And I, like a couple years after I started getting braids and stuff, and she was like, oh, you have the cleanest, most, and I was like, yeah. And I told her the same story. So,
wow.
Yeah, if it wasn't for her, I'd have like caked up dandruff.
Shout out to her. Definitely don't have a story like that. Mine were just Miss Hewlett.
You got dandruff
and
now.
Okay, I have a wig now. So you couldn't be able to tell what kind of dandruff I have. Miss Hewlett, so you Miss Merriman, English, AP English, AP Government and History. And they were two teachers that just taught me how to step outside of a bubble and think for myself. Never forget them. And taught me how to like English. Not something I was really into.
You didn't know how to write English?
Not what I said.
You said you didn't know how to write what?
No, I said taught me how to like. I didn't like the subject of English. I learned to love it.
I loved it too. It was my favorite subject.
It became that of the teacher that I had.
Yeah, I still didn't like Earth Science though.
What is Earth Science? I don't think I ever had Earth Science.
Earth Science is what you took in the seventh grade.
It was
Earth Science, and then after that, it was physical science.
I didn't. You had a Louisiana physics. Education. I had a Texas one.
Mm, wow.
Is that it for today?
What does that mean? It's like, what are you?
You took
like
Earth Science.
You got sit in the fucking class all day and sing "Deep in the Heart of Texas" from dusk till
the
dawn.
The stars at night are big and bright.
All right. Do you have an unexpected ally of the week?
I'm still yours because yours.
This
is good.
This is a great one. There was an Uber driver out in Chicago that saw a guy that was the victim of a drive-by shooting. It is a beautiful story. And he drove the guy to the hospital, put him in his Uber, drove him to the hospital. He then got a $5,000 reward. And rather than keep the reward, he gave it to the gentleman that had been shot. Said that just daring, aggressive humanity. I loved it so much.
Was
emphatic about it.
Just encouraging everybody to help this man. And the reason, and like you brought that beautiful story to the table, and I brought a story about a man who had been enslaved for 20 plus years in South Carolina, and that is why I don't have an unexpected ally of the week. I can't get over story.
All right, guys, we appreciate you putting up with us while I was on vacation. We will be back next week coming from LA. Take your thinking caps off and do not stop learning. I am Van Lathan.
I'm Rachel Lindsay.